In one 2022 survey, almost 80% of companies experienced cybersecurity incidents, with malware, phishing, and data leaks comprising the top three attacks. The rate of data breach in the Philippines is higher than the global average of 57%. This makes it crucial for businesses in the Philippines to boost data privacy protection and cybersecurity hygiene. How should businesses and individuals protect our personal information from the rising threat of bad actors? What should be the accountability mindset for companies and individuals alike? Catch all of these in today's episode, Data Breaches and the Law, What You Need to Know. This is Prime Movers, a legal podcast that covers the latest and relevant trends and insights on Philippine legal issues and topics, led by leading thinkers and law practitioners at Gorreta, Africa, Cauton, and Saavedra. In today's podcast, Edsel Tupaz, partner at Gorreta, will be providing an in-depth discussion on data breach, including real-world examples and impact, breach reporting and compliance, and best practices in protecting data. Edsel is lead of data privacy, cybersecurity, and AI initiatives at Gorreta.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the 9th episode of Prime Movers. This is Christine Torres, one of the partners in Gorreta, and a member of the firm's corporate and technology media and telecommunications groups. Joining me today is Edsel Tupaz, a dual-qualified lawyer in the Philippines and New York. Edsel leads the data privacy, cybersecurity, and AI initiatives practice group at the firm. Prior to joining the firm, he was a senior government executive at the Department of Public Works and Highways. Edsel serves as data protection officer and legal advisor to many of the most impactful technology companies in Asia. He received his Master's of Law from Harvard Law School and Juris Doctor from the Ateneo de Manila Law School. Welcome to Prime Movers, Edsel.
Hi, Christine, and to everyone tuning in today. Thank you for having me.
We're back again with another episode, and this time it's data privacy. This is a very relevant topic for all of us because of the rising concerns about targeted smishing, the new SIM Registration Act, and other data breaches and cybersecurity risks we have been encountering over the last few months. First and foremost, can you explain to us what a data breach is all about? What is a data breach, and are there legal parameters on its definition under Philippine law?
Yes, thank you, Tin, for these queries. There are indeed legal and regulatory definitions which one ought to consider. A personal data breach refers to a breach of security leading to the accidental or unlawful destruction, loss, alteration, or unauthorized disclosure of personal data. A personal data breach may be in the nature of an availability breach resulting from accidental or unlawful destruction of personal data, an integrity breach resulting from the alteration of personal data, or a confidentiality breach resulting from the unauthorized disclosure or access to personal data.
It's good to know that there are different types of personal data breaches. But how do we know that a particular access or disclosure of information will be considered as a data breach?
That's a very good question, Tin. In the area of data privacy, one of the more important questions that we need to ask ourselves is the data considered personal information? So these are some of the threshold concepts which we must come to terms with. Is the data considered sensitive personal information? So these are all defined under the Data Privacy Act of the Philippines. So personal data refers to all types of personal information. Personal information is a term that refers to any information recorded or in material form from which the identity of an individual is apparent or can be reasonably and directly ascertained by the person holding the information, or when put together with other information, would directly and certainly identify an individual. On the other hand, sensitive personal information refers to personal information involving the data subject's race, ethnic origin, marital status or civil status, age, color, religious or philosophical or political affiliations, right? So you'll find that these definitions refer to potential subjects of discrimination, okay? Number two, health, education, genetic, or the sexual life of a person, or a criminal history of the person. So these are also types of sensitive personal information. The third category would be government-issued identifiers, government-issued IDs, and so on. And number four would be those established by an executive order or an act of Congress that ought to be kept classified. So for instance, the moment a person, a simple act of accessing a database or a manual filing system without authority where personal information may be stored, this unauthorized act may already be considered a breach under Philippine law. There's also what we call a man-in-the-middle attack. So here, the attacker or the bad actor intercepts or gains access to a network or a system and deploys tools to access and collect, the subject's personal information being transmitted. And this is one of the usual schemes for cybercriminals in the course of doing identity theft or credit card fraud. It's worth mentioning that most data breaches today, according to several surveys, confirm that most data breaches involve employees, insiders of company, and a vast majority of these breaches pertain to mere human error, right? Neglect, human error, and some of them are deliberate, right? But most of them are caused by neglect. So just because a person is an employee of a company doesn't mean that that person has the right to access, all personal information of any given data subject, stuff laying on the table, for instance. So if someone is from, let's say, the marketing department, that fact alone does not give or authorize that employee to gain access to, one's employee files, such as, social security numbers, birth dates, residential address, and so on. So that's usually within the territory of human resources. But even then, even within HR, there ought to be various security clearances. So it's important to etch in stone the responsibilities and security clearances and access rights of employees within a company setting to avoid breach incidences that may arise out of oversight or negligence. So a key policy in mind would be coming up with a privacy policy or a privacy manual, which ought to be aligned with human resource policy.
Since you've mentioned unauthorized access to a data system, what are the ways in which a personal information controller can prevent security breaches? And does the Philippine National Privacy Commission, or NPC, require personal information controller to do anything with respect to unauthorized access to personal data?
One important aspect in managing the information lifecycle is for personal information controllers, or PICs, to always consider breach management. So this includes having a security incident management policy, a data privacy officer or data protection officer, a data breach response team, and of course, effective implementation of the company's security measures and privacy policies. When it comes to managing breaches, or what we call breach management, there are also breach reporting procedures that must be observed. Some of this is regulated. So just last year, the NPC launched a data breach notification management system, or what we call DBNMS, where controllers, PICs, should regularly submit their personal data breach reports and annual security incident reports. In some cases, notification is very time sensitive, within 72 hours.
In the face of rising compliance requirements, following actual breaches, trends that are occurring in the Philippines and elsewhere, data privacy is something that should really be taken seriously by companies who happen to be personal information controllers, not to mention the costly, admin penalties that might be imposed by the regulators such as the National Privacy Commission if personal information controllers are found liable for violations under the Philippine Data Privacy Act. So under various NPC issuances, the data breach response team ideally should be the primary team of the company that shall be responsible for such things as the implementation of the company's security incident management policy, management of security incidents and personal data breaches, and compliance with the relevant provisions of the law, issuances of the NPC that are relevant to personal data breach management. The data breach response team must be ready to assess and evaluate a security incident once it occurs, to restore integrity to the information and communication system, mitigate and remedy any resulting damage caused by the breach, and to comply with reporting requirements. So ideally, the data breach response team is multi-stakeholder, consists of the data protection officer, or the DPO, IT, IT security experts, legal counsel, whether internal or external, other support members who are crucial in any breach response. And these support members and other stakeholders could include public relations, HR, customer relations, among a host of others, who can form a good team to be able to deal effectively with a security incident. So the data breach response team is multi-stakeholder. I mentioned that earlier. The response team may also be outsourced by the PIC, but outsourcing, mind you, will always be subject to requirements under our data privacy laws. It will not reduce any type of liability that would otherwise apply to a PIC.
So let's talk about data breach in the Philippines. Has the Philippines experienced any major data breaches recently?
Yeah, good question, Christine. According to a study by a virtual private network service provider, the Philippines ranks among the top 10% of out of 250 territories in terms of data breach incidents in the third quarter of 2022. So in other words, the Philippines ranks 23rd out of 250 territories that are subject to the study. So that's pretty high. And the Philippines in the third quarter of 2022 encountered a total of about 523,000 leaked accounts. So that's an aggregated data. This is a significant increase from the second quarter, where only 152,000 records were leaked. So this means that there were 5 leaked accounts for every 1,000 Filipinos during the July to September 2022 period. So between the second and third quarter, we see a rise of times 3, a factor of 3 in the rise of breach incidents. So the Philippines is also the fourth highest in the region for data breaches behind Indonesia, China, and Taiwan. So interesting. These numbers are hot off the press. According to Cisco, around 80% of companies in the Philippines have experienced some form of a data breach in the Philippines. So this is a corresponding study. Of these companies, about 40% lost at least $500,000 worth of digital fraud. So the survey conducted by Cisco found that about 77% of security actors in the Philippines reported a data breach in their organization over the past 12 months, all throughout 2022. So all of this means that the rate of data breaches in the Philippines is higher than the global average. So this makes it crucial for local businesses to boost cybersecurity and data protection. In a survey, many respondents reported substantial losses because of cybersecurity incidents, with about 69% saying that it cost them up to $100,000 US, and 38% reporting losses of up to $500,000 US. So these are independent studies, and it seems that some of these data points and these findings are converging.
Wow, that is overwhelming information. Can you tell us more about these data breaches and how did it happen?
Yes, certainly. Companies in the Philippines are vulnerable to typical types of data breaches. These include malware, phishing, or smishing, right? So the shift to hybrid work during the pandemic has been a factor, has increased our collective risk. Employees are more and more using unregistered devices to access work platforms. A large majority of Filipino companies reported that over 8 of 10 of their employees are indeed using unregistered devices. So 75% of these companies reported that their employees spend more than 10% of their workday using unregistered devices.
You mentioned smishing. Is this the same as phishing, Edsel? And can you cite examples on how this occurs?
Yeah, nice term of art there, Christine. Smishing is a type of phishing attack that uses mobile text messaging, or SMS, to target victims. So it's an acronym for SMS phishing, hence smishing. Smishing occurs when threat actors send text messages that contain malicious links or codes to trick people into clicking on them. So for example, in one smishing scenario, a text message may contain a code and a shortened link that, you know, when you click it, it would bind your mobile phone number to a fake Facebook account. Okay, so smishing can also be used in other, you know, other situations like online shopping, online delivery, where, you know, victims would usually receive a text message that appears to be about a product that they happen to buy online. And then the message will contain a shortened link that, you know, if you click on it, would redirect you to a fake website that would ask for further personal and banking information in order to purportedly complete the delivery.
What did the Philippine National Privacy Commission do about these smishing attacks?
Yeah, the National Privacy Commission, or the NPC, has noticed that many smishing reports it receives are coming from specific mobile numbers that happen to be registered to certain texting services. Okay, so the NPC was able to trace some of these. And the NPC's Complaints and Investigation Division is actively investigating the root causes of targeted smishing messages, including finding out the patterns in which name formats are being used, the patterns in the use of name formats that match the names of people registered with popular payment apps, you know, mobile wallets and messaging apps. And the NPC is working closely with law enforcement and the telcos, you know, the telecommunications companies, to develop strategies to combat the recent surge in targeted smishing messages. As a specific action, telcos have blocked mobile numbers that have been identified as sending smishing messages and are continuing to block messages with malicious URLs that are related to smishing.
Given the extent of smishing, do you think a whole-of-government approach may be required? And how did government agencies respond to smishing attacks?
Yeah, definitely, Tin, a whole-of-government approach will be required. I'd say a whole-of-society approach. I don't know about you, but I still get random text messages every day, you know, purportedly from delivery services, from Shopee or Lazada, you know, asking me to click all these tiny URLs and stuff. So I still get them today. And I hope that, you know, our government and the rest of society could be, you know, vigilant, continue to be vigilant in defending ourselves from these recurring forms of cyber attacks. So indeed, a whole of society approach, I think, it ought to be followed. And it's just not just our government and the NPC. On October 10, 2022, Republic Act 11934, otherwise known as the Subscriber Identity Module Registration Act, or the SIM Registration Act, was passed, was signed into law. And this law requires all public telcos, or what we call PTEs, to register SIM cards, both prepaid and postpaid, before selling them to people like you and me, before activating them, with the goal of improving accountability and assisting law enforcement in solving cybercrimes. So the National Telecommunications Commission, so this is different from the NPC, the NTC is working with other agencies such as the Department of Information Communications Technology, Department of Trade and Industry, National Privacy Commission, and telcos and consumer groups for the joint implementation of the SIM Registration Act. So under guidelines of the SIM Registration Act, end users are obligated to register their SIM cards with their designated public telecommunications entities prior to the SIM's the SIM card's activation and usage. Okay, so non-registration will result in the SIM card being deactivated. Public telcos, along with the related entities, are only allowed to activate SIM cards after end users have completed the registration process and must initially sell them in a deactivated state. Okay, so existing SIMs that are being used will be automatically turned off if their users do not complete the registration process within a given time frame. So in response to calls from politicians and legislators for the release of the SIM Registration Act rules, all SIM card users, including companies, individuals, even foreign users, must be aware that we all have until April 28, 2023 to register all our SIM cards. Deadline might be extended for 120 days, remains to be seen. Failure to register may result in disruptions to business operations.
What about data privacy concerns in relation to the SIM Registration Act?
Yeah, good that you asked, Christine. The NPC has been quite proactive on that front. The NPC and various telcos have recently held a stakeholder meeting last December 29, 2022. To discuss public and social concerns about privacy and the overall implementation of the SIM Registration Act. Okay, so this is a social issue, not just a business issue. So the SIM registration process, which started just last December 27, raised questions about the terms and conditions and privacy policies being used by various telecommunications companies. So the meeting, which was led no less than by the Privacy Commissioner, aimed to address many of these concerns, including concerns about notifications or consent forms that are being displayed on, the telco's websites and mobile applications, which seek permission from our users to use one's personal data for various purposes, like, for marketing, for profiling, for sharing with third parties and such. So all major telcos actively participated during these December meetings, and among several issues that were discussed involved what we call optional notices and tick boxes that happened to be included in the SIM card registration process. Options to allow or decline the receipt of promotional alerts and third-party sharing of personal information. So it's noteworthy that the Privacy Commissioner directed telcos to remove all notices and tick boxes that relate to data sharing with third-party entities. He also advised them to place notices and tick boxes related to commercial and promotional alerts on a separate page. Telcos, in response, reassured that users could opt out of receiving promotional alerts, such means like SMS or email and other means more easily. And additionally, the Privacy Commissioner also advised Smart Globe and Dido to make improvements to their websites and applications to better comply with the Data Privacy Act of 2012. So the Privacy Commissioner stressed that telcos must be diligent in protecting data, to handle it ethically, and to secure all data in accordance with the SIM Registration Act and privacy rules. So data ethics and privacy ethics are key in this big social use case. So the Privacy Commissioner also advised that telcos ought to implement measures to ensure the security of the data collected during the SIM card registration process. The NPC finds it important to protect data privacy rights of mobile users as something very essential to the successful implementation of SIM card registration.
In line with this, are there breaches with regard to another form of messaging through the use of mobile application?
Yeah, good question. I want to turn the topic to a closely associated topic on overcollection, right? So overcollection has been associated with the rise of breach incidents. So according to Open Web Application Security Project, right? So it's a project that conducts studies on mobile apps. This study shows that mobile apps have been more vulnerable to attacks than regular web apps. So when people download mobile apps, we unknowingly expose ourselves to privacy risks. So in many cases, users are required to accept all permissions, all or nothing, or cancel the installation of the app, which is what we call a denial of service, right? So the app's requested permissions are not well-defined in many cases, and it makes it difficult for users like you and me to understand the implications of granting permissions, right? So mobile apps are riskier than web apps. So in addition, including app permissions and privacy notices, you know, does not necessarily ensure transparency in some of these cases. And an application's declared permissions may not actually match the actual permissions required. So there can be a disconnect between paper permissions and actual operational permissions.
Can you give us an example, Edsel?
Certainly. So here's one thing. We're approaching Valentine's Day. So there's a typical increase in the usage of dating apps as we approach Valentine's Day, right? So to create an account, well, this is what I hear from people, okay? So I'm happily married. Most dating apps require users to fill out an online form or connect, you know, through convenience, purported convenience, your existing social media account, such as Facebook or Twitter, to verify user identity, right? So in doing this, dating apps gain a lot of access and a lot of control over personal data of a user. So in recent years, vulnerabilities that could put users' personal data at risk have been discovered, okay? So although a dating app might be benign or harmless, it's important to remember that, you know, use of data apps can potentially create a lot of negative effect on a user's reputation or privacy. Okay, so on a broader scale, and it's just not just dating apps in particular, based on a recent study, Philippine mobile applications tend to have a significant higher permission request rate than the global average. Okay, so referring to Philippine-issued mobile applications, and we compare it with the rest of the world, right? So permission requests can pertain to such things, you know, like when an app requests access to your location, your contact list, your inbox, your camera, your call log, right? I mentioned location. So if this study is indeed accurate about Philippine mobile apps, Christine, by and large, I think Philippine mobile apps may tend to overcollect data in ways that are dangerously disproportionate to, you know, their purported legitimate purposes and use functionality.
How did the NPC address this issue?
Yeah, in addressing the issue of, you know, overcollection and overpermissioning, the NPC has responded by highlighting the issue of forced consent, right? So forced consent is a bad thing in data privacy. So in short, many apps sort of, you know, get your consent in order to provide services. Otherwise, they will deny service, right? So instant messaging apps or IM apps have become a crucial part of daily life as we try to adapt to, you know, like mobility restrictions caused by COVID-19. And you know, we have somehow shifted from in-person interactions to you know, distance interaction. But, you know, at the same time, people have been becoming increasingly worried about privacy and the security of many of the apps that we use as people fear that data privacy rights might be violated due to, you know, rampant permission requests by many of these IAM apps. So IAM apps, incident messaging apps, often ask for permissions to access various features on your device. I mentioned earlier, you know, like access to contacts, to your microphone, to your camera, to your photos, to your other files stored in your phone. And denying permission, you know, when you click deny or I do not agree, denying permission to access these features can lead the app from preventing you to use the app further, right? So the NPC believes that limiting access to the full features of IAM apps on the ground of the user choosing to deny permission is utterly unnecessary. It's inconsistent with data privacy norms here and elsewhere. So in privacy parlance, we call it forced consent. It's forced consent is inconsistent with the principle that consent that must be secured from the data subject prior to processing be free, specific, and informed. Okay, so forced consent means your consent is not free. The NPC is encouraging IAM app developers and companies to review their policies and allow users who have been denied app permissions for data privacy concerns to have full access to the app's features. Okay, so and I want to go to this idea of privacy by design. Okay, so the Data Security and Technology Standard Division of the NPC is quite aware of privacy by design and has recommended guidelines for, you know, app developers to respect user privacy by allowing users to opt out of device permissions that can track, you know, store and access your data. So privacy should not be an afterthought under principles of privacy by design, you know, as you develop and design applications. So in that sense, the NPC has been quite proactive in promoting privacy by design measures.
Now, let's take a look at the comparative country practice. How do other jurisdictions regulate data breaches?
Very good. The well-known regulatory framework is what we call the General Data Protection Regulation, or the GDPR. And this mostly applies to the EU and the European Economic Area. Okay, so GDPR. So in Europe, under GDPR, organizations were covered by that set of regulations must take measures to prevent and detect personal data breaches and have procedures in place for investigation and internal reporting. So organizations under GDPR must have the ability to effectively respond to personal data breaches to minimize any negative impact upon the rights of the data subject and the data of the personal data of data subjects. And organizations must maintain records of all personal data breaches, including all details about the breach, regardless of whether that breach is subject to any notification requirements to the European Data Protection Supervisor, or the EDPS.
What about breach reporting procedures in the Philippines?
Yeah, so the National Privacy Commission has launched an easy-to-use system called the Data Breach Notification Management System, or DBNMS. Allows for quick tracking and submission of personal data breach notifications and what we call annual security incident reports. So the DBNMS is automated. It makes it simpler for personal information controllers to submit notifications and reports about potential data breaches. So in addition, DBNMS is transparent. It improves transparency by providing controllers with real-time information about their data breach. Now, the NPC will only accept submissions of personal data breach notifications and annual security incident reports through the DBNMS online platform and through no other means of submission. So before, you could probably file it through analog means, you know, by courier or by email. Those measures are no longer valid. So as a reminder to the public, the deadline for the submission of annual security incident reports for the years 2018 to 2021 was last October 31, 2022. For the year 2022, annual security incident reports, the DBNMS can accept submissions up to March 31, this year.
Thank you for reminding our listeners about the data breach notification procedure, Edsel. We hope everyone can comply accordingly. In addition, what can companies and other personal information controllers do to safeguard the rights of Philippine data subjects, and how can breaches be avoided?
Great questions, Christine. Organizations should practice good cybersecurity hygiene. Okay, so there's no avoiding the need to secure internet and network connections and enhance, you know, individual access credentials like your passwords, you know, having strong, resilient passwords. In the digital age, it's important for all of us to have the ability to confirm a particular user's identity, regardless of wherever they access the data, whether it's at home or in the office. Companies should focus on implementing security measures on their databases of personal information, whether, you know, information was collected electronically or through manual filing systems. So I think a good operational grasp of managing the information lifecycle from collection, use, storage to, you know, deletion and sharing to continuous improvement upon, you know, the company's privacy management program, or what we call the PMP, are all essential to achieving data privacy resilience. Okay, so companies can take steps to embed, and I mentioned earlier, privacy by design principles in platform development, and not to think of data privacy and protection as a mere afterthought, right? So data privacy should be hardwired in one's DNA in as early as the design phase, well before the pre-launch phase, and well even before beta testing. So not just companies, but end users also have a role to play in protecting data privacy rights. In the end, you know, the whole law about data privacy here and elsewhere internationally is to protect each of our data privacy rights, you know, you and me. This is not just companies. So users can create good habits by examining, you know, the permissions which mobile apps would routinely request from all of us. So, you know, don't just click away, you know, just because you're so rushed to use the app, you know, so excited about something. Really take time to read all the permissions and requests. And you'll be surprised about how many, you know, about how many apps are prone to collect from all our daily activity. It's very surprising. You know, I mentioned earlier, this could be access to your contact list, right? Your message inbox, right? Your call logs, and even your social media apps. So users should be cautious about clicking links from services which you did not sign up for. And all of us should exercise caution whenever we see, you know, these shortened links like, you know, tiny URL and bit.ly, and because, you know, the real URL is masked behind these summarized forms. So clicking on these shortened links may lead to malicious sites that ask for further personal and financial information from you. So to protect yourself, it's recommended that you use, you know, registered devices, legit devices, and use the built-in spam feature on SMS apps to block and report unsolicited text messages.
As we wrap up today's podcast, what are your key takeaways for startup companies and individuals in safeguarding privacy rights and in managing data breaches?
Startups and companies should keep in mind that compliance revolves around general data privacy principles of transparency, proportionality, and legitimate purpose. If you have a compliance mindset around these three key principles, it's a really good start. In addition, the NPC has crafted what we call the five pillars of accountability and compliance, which pretty much sums up the requirements that controllers and processors have to observe under the Philippine Data Privacy Act. So pillar one, commit to compliance through the appointment of a data protection officer, we call the DPO. Pillar two, gain knowledge of risks by conducting regularly what we call a privacy impact assessment. Pillar three, be accountable by developing your own privacy management program and, you know, regularly updating your privacy manual by consulting all your stakeholders. Pillar four, demonstrate compliance through the implementation of privacy and data protection measures. So So these pertain to security measures, technical, organizational, and physical measures that you can set up around you to protect the data rights of your data subjects. And pillar 5, be prepared for data breaches through regular exercising breach reporting procedures. You know, abstract exercises of breach reporting are key. So when the real deal comes, you'll be very prepared. Now, not just startups and companies, but lastly, data subjects like you and me should keep in mind the following. First of all, we ought to read privacy notices. So read. So privacy notice is a document that provides information about how your personal data will be handled. It contains such things as the scope of the processing, your rights as a data subject, and how you can assert those rights before the company or the app. Be selective about the information you provide. So not all fields are required to be filled out. Only provide data that is necessary for the app to function properly. Make sure that the information you provide is relevant to the use functionality of the app. Next, regularly review and adjust your privacy settings. So sometimes you wake up one day, your privacy settings have changed, right? So always check them out. Not just after installing the app, but also periodically. This will give you more control over who can view your information and will definitely help your privacy and security according to your risk tolerance. Examine the app's permissions. So this is probably the biggest takeaway. So many mobile apps request more permissions than necessary, than they would need to perform their use functionality. And, as we mentioned about the survey on Philippine apps, they do tend to overcollect, which can pose greater risk to you, right? So I mentioned earlier that Philippine apps, if the studies are correct, tend to request more permissions that are higher than the global average. Be sure to disable any unnecessary or suspicious permissions before using the app. Do your own KYC, right? Be cautious when interacting with people online, right? So you might be interacting with a bot or a malicious actor. It's easy to meet new people online through various applications, right? So it's important to exercise caution and a lot of common sense when sharing highly personal information with the digital avatar you're dealing with, right? Be mindful of who you're sharing your personal information with.
Thank you so much for your time, Edsel.
Definitely my pleasure, Christine. Thank you.
And that is it for our 9th episode of Prime Movers. We hope you enjoyed and learned a lot from our discussion.